Inseparable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner genius. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Well, good evening to all our admirable friends out there. My name is Carol.
Hi, and I'm Buddy. Good evening.
And for those of you who listened last week and previously, you probably noticed we have that lovely intro, and gosh, I could listen to that over and over again. I love that music.
Yeah, it is. The Board of Admirable Friends all pitched in and gave their 2 cents and
voted.
In 1 minute, I think it describes what we're about really nicely. They're going to play it again during the break and again at the end of the show, and we'll put it on the website. But it basically says the whole story, doesn't it?
It's lovely. I really like that a lot. All right, so how do you want to start?
Well, today's the context of today's show is duplicity in character.
Mm-hmm.
We put together a handout, I hope you all have, called Cultivating Character.
And for those that don't have the handout, can you just mention how they can get it?
Sure. Just go to bbsradio.com/admirablefriends and just scroll down a bit and look for the handouts. And you'll see that lesson 5 is tonight. Again, the format for Admirable Friends, it'll be 10 lessons each week, one of those 10. And then when we get done with 10, we'll start again at 1. Dealing with the ideal mind qualities, 10 of them, and their relative emotional counterparts. We've paired duplicity and character today, the ideal mind quality being character or virtue. And you want to do the recap?
From last I don't week? Want to do the recap. Can we start with gratitude?
We should always start with being grateful.
Okay. Well, when I thought about what I was grateful for, I know that Sunday was Father's Day. And so it made me think how grateful I was for my own dad. And because we were camping over the weekend, he was the one that instilled that love of the outdoors and camping and having us all together as a family. And so I thought, that's what I'm grateful for, the fact that my dad introduced our family to camping.
Yeah.
And strangely enough, I was also thinking today, too, that he and my mom, I feel, were my first introduction to Admirable Friends. I look at them and I think to myself, they were the examples of what Admirable Friends were.
So they were your Admirable Friends?
They were. I think if I were older than their counterpart, I would want them to be my Admirable Friends.
Oh, that's great.
So
now you might tell our listeners the story how they had your sister heard about this radio show from a posting that Alex, our son, posted on one of the social networks, and she heard about it. And what did she say to you when she called up and heard about your radio show? Well, she says, "Don't you consider me an admirable friend, Carol? Why didn't you tell me about this show?"
Well, I just kind of wanted to keep it, you know, on the hush-hush until it was, like, took off and it was a little more polished in my eyes. But that was a mistake on my part because, she wouldn't have cared one way or the other. But
yeah, but the fact that she wanted to know whether she was an admirable friend or not, that was interesting.
You know, yeah, I just thought it was a given. I mean, you know, but... So she's on the journey, and hopefully she's listening tonight, or she'll get to listen tomorrow. So, but anyways, that was my gratitude, my dad.
Yes. My gratitude for the day is for my teacher, Jean Jeffrey. For some reason this morning, I drew attention to all that he's brought to me in terms of education and support, and the material and the media. I'm grateful for the work that he's done, his whole life being dedicated to improving himself and his availability of teaching. So that's what I'm grateful for today.
Nice. He really does have a nice way about him. He's very approachable, first of all, in person.
Yeah.
But as far as listening to him, I love listening to his voice.
Yeah.
He's very soothing, and he kind of translates really well.
And I go back to his audios from 2001, and he is bulletproof saying the same thing that he's saying now as he said in 2001.
So you don't see him changing to mood, you know, to morph with
the message,
the environment or anything.
His
he's just steady as she goes.
No, and he refuses to take money for his teachings. Donations are accepted, of course, but he will never equate his teachings with money. And it's quite an admirable approach. Never compromises his teachings. And one thing I want to add tonight is we're going to cover these items like we have in the past, but we're going to encourage our listeners to pick up the phone and call during any time.
Okay.
Because we are getting great comments from the people that are calling in. Our listeners like listening to the callers more than they like listening to us.
Go figure.
Go figure.
Okay.
I guess, you know, it brings an element of reality to it. And
I don't want to be talking for an hour.
We must still be talking from our soapbox.
Yeah.
You know, but let our listeners call.
Okay.
All right, Carol, you want to cover just last week?
You could do the recap.
Okay.
I'll add in.
We're on autopilot and authenticity last week.
Mm-hmm.
And authenticity is always a great discussion because it has to do with one of the biggest needs of our listeners, and that's to be authentic and to live in an authentic way. And we describe that element of truth being an inner truth versus a truth, an external truth, kind of like scientific truths. We're talking about internal truths.
And we said there were two kinds of authentic truths. There was the truth of statements and the truth of determination or will, which was a vow.
Yeah, and that was the second one, was the internal truth.
Right.
And that's where we spent most of our time, because when we think of truth being authentic, we think of the internal, you know, which really plays a big emphasis. It puts a big emphasis on being aware of intention.
Right.
Because the definition of authenticity that we're working with is being true to our intentions. So we have to really be honest about why we're intending to do things.
It's being true to the intention that precede our actions, words, and thoughts. Is where it's all, where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
Yeah, what precedes the action, the word, and the thought is the intention, which is the most subtle form of thinking. We have to be really quiet, don't we, to be aware of our intentions.
Well, if you know what it's like to be on autopilot, you certainly know that it takes a little bit more space between the action and the thought to kind of give it that
freedom of choice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's a great lesson in authenticity. I think what we'll just do to finally recap on that, Carol, so we can get into the body of this discussion, is just talk about what the results of living an authentic life are, what the benefits are of living authentically. Number one is witnessing that inner calm that accompanies truth and honesty. And making reconciliation and forgiveness possible would be the second benefit. Making reconciliation and forgiveness possible. That's an interesting benefit. In other words, the more authentic we are with ourselves, the more we are able to forgive, forget, and reconcile. More inner security, thereby freeing us from hating and hiding from ourselves, that inner self-esteem that we're looking for. That's another benefit. Developing qualities of the heart that liberate us from the basic obstructions of fear, hatred, and greed. So those are the benefits, and unless we have any callers on last week, well, let's kind of segue. Carolyn, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Who wouldn't want to live an authentic life after you listed those things?
What's that?
I said, who wouldn't want a more authentic life when you see all those benefits?
And the real trick is not wanting it so bad that we make ourselves feel lousy when we find we fall down each day. That's part of living authentic. You're true to your missteps as well as your positive steps, and you try not to take a lot of this stuff personal.
But I think it's like you said last week, I think the choo-choo train going up the hill, I think I can't, you know, it's little steps, you know, one at a time in a forward motion, and that's where all the benefits.
Right. Personal transformation does not come easy.
Yeah.
It's a progression.
Mm-hmm.
It takes dedication. And it takes the ability to be really truthful about your experience and observant about your experience.
But it's not perfect either. It's not a perfect journey.
No. That's why it says truth of the intentions. Your intentions can be bad, but at least if you're honest about it,
sure,
you're that much closer to changing it, because what you've done is you've recognized that you haven't denied a bad intention, which is dangerous, because when you deny that bad intention, you're more likely going to have it again, meaning that you didn't see it. Or you come up with some sort of storyline saying, I didn't intend to do that, like when we were kids. No, I didn't do that, Daddy.
Yeah.
Oh, sure you did. Be honest with me.
Yeah.
Right? Didn't we do that with our kids all the time?
Reflect on it, then, you know.
Yeah.
Well.
It's funny how we're adults, we go back to our childhood thinking about how we have to be honest with ourselves.
Yeah. Isn't that part of the authentic life? They say the maturity, the more mature you are, authenticity is found in mature adults as they become more mature and self-developed. I mean, that's the inner confidence, that's that beam or that light that radiates from inside that you built up, you know, stoking that fire that you've given all that good energy and fuel with.
What I find it personally sometimes discouraging, but I understand, is that it's like the rites of passage were never there when we were children. So we never got a chance to sort out our external influences with what I was in closest to our heart, because we were so caught up in everyday activity. We never, like the old days, went out and lived alone and sorted these things out. So now we have to sort them out. We have to sort out how we were conditioned, how we were grown up, and then we have to be true to our heart, true to our intentions. So we have to sort out the external influences with internally where we want to be, the calling of the heart, that call for authenticity. So now we're sorting out what you might have been able to sort out at 8 or 9 years old if they threw us out into the wild. Mm-hmm. Do you ever think about that?
Well, no, but, you know, it's kind of interesting when you talk about, like, looking back on Native Americans, when the rite of passage for young men, they were to, you know, go out and fend for themselves. But look at the message. It's separating them from the tribe.
Yeah.
And then they had to singularly rely on themselves.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's taking all that external stuff.
And the parents
away.
Wanted that. The parents are saying, look, we taught you some things, but we want you to sort out, listening to what the elders, listening to everything, but we want you to sort out with your life the choices. So they were giving that child, I think, an exercise, a spin around the block on free will. And recognizing that, what we call the chairman or the director, at 8 years old, here we are meditating and cultivating and looking for the witness among all the chatter in our minds.
Well,
don't you think
if
we were just 8 years old, we could have found that chairman?
I mean, we don't. The average person doesn't have that luxury of separating themselves. Even when we go on vacation, you know, we're inundated with stimuli.
That's what I feel I'm doing here at 57 years old. That's what I feel I've been doing for the last 15 or 20 years worth of introspection. Is kind of sorting through those issues.
So, I kind of took you off off message. I got you onto authenticity more than you wanted to.
Let's get to character, which is synonymous with virtue.
Absolutely. We can do that. Well, we take on one of the kind of interesting things about character traits and virtue. We're using it in a context of using it as a training tool.
Yes, but in contrast to the virtues that we were established through our religious backgrounds, our cultural backgrounds, our family dynamic, social dynamic. You know, we pick up virtues, and society tells us this is the way you should behave, situational ethics or conditional ethics, and some are grounded in their religion. But the context for an admirable friend to take up the issue of character is not to go out and say we're virtuous because we practice the Ten Commandments, so to speak. An admirable friendship program differs from, not differs, but supports the religious lifestyle, is that we consciously elect one or more virtues and train with those and use them as a training tool.
Right. Well, it's not meant to practice to become morally superior, like judgment.
Exactly.
It's like, you know, I've got the secret, you don't, because I'm practicing. I got the, you know, the 7 or the 10 in my pocket.
Well, tell me how you think, if you would, let's give our listeners an example, how you would use a virtue as a training tool. Elect one for me. Any virtue.
Generosity.
Okay. How would that help you in your training?
Well, I would say just generous of, there's many types of generosity. I mean, there's, of course, monetary and material generosity. There's generosity of the spirit, wishing goodwill towards somebody else.
Well, those are the examples, right? But for you to actually practice generosity is an interrupt to your everyday, right?
Oh, absolutely. Right. There's random acts of kindness. There's many.
So it's causing you to be more intentional about your activities.
Absolutely.
So that's what's meant by electing it as a training tool. Again, it's not to be morally superior.
No.
It's we pick these, you know, I fast, what, once every 2 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
I fast for a day.
You do.
And inevitably, when I fast, I pay more attention to my actions. The fasting in itself, because I can't go in then, and I catch myself in all these little routines where I stuff food in my mouth normally during the day. I would never otherwise catch these routines.
Unless you stripped away everything and just looked at it for what it was.
So I'm not fasting to be superior to anyone else. And I'm not fasting to lose weight. I'm fasting to learn more about the way my mind works. So that's the overriding theme of how we use character and virtue as training as an admirable friend.
Well, the benefits of good character, of course, are it lessens the mind's chatter. Because, as you were saying, once you strip away, once you kind of put the emphasis on using that as a practicing tool, you've kind of pushed away all the
chatter.
The negative or mindless stuff, because you're really focused on good energy moving forward.
Well, and I start to see all that chatter was saying, you know, you're hatching a plan. Now, how am I going to get to Starbucks? Should I get this? Where am I going to have for lunch? All of the work and all the mind activity associated with eating is exposed because I took it away.
Another thing that it does is I read that it lessens the regret that we live with. And yes. I thought that was really interesting, but I think it's important because when you open your heart and you build all these character virtuous practices, it's an empowering thing.
Yes.
So you feel like you're doing something very positive and very good and very, I can't even think of the word I'm trying to grasp at. But I just, for some reason, that word empowering sticks in my head.
But the idea of it letting go of regret is impressive for you.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if you're doing something positive and moving forward, there's no room for regret.
Right.
Get rid of it.
And see, I look at the opposite side of that and say that if I wasn't virtuous, let's say the other side would be that I was deceitful or
duplicity,
right? What baggage am I carrying with me that's going to cause regret? Because so the opposite, see? So I'm looking at if I wasn't virtuous, because I still feel like we live in a dualistic world and we have to decide that the choices, there's some good guys and there's some bad guys. And bad character traits are going to come back and haunt us on our deathbed someday.
Well, yeah, they don't serve us well at all.
No. So you can't have no virtue, right? So you're either going to elect good virtue or bad virtue. And bad virtue has some real bad consequences. At minimum, we're never going to be able to settle our minds when we do bad things.
No, that's a cycle that's just going to haunt you.
Well, go get angry at somebody and then go try to sit down and calm yourself down. Doesn't it take a while?
It does.
Of course.
And if you meet somebody else or, you know, you take it out on somebody else, it's just kind of a chain of events that takes on a life of its own. Mm.
So sometimes I find it hard to see what the value of good virtue is without seeing the opposite side of it. So that's kind of how I practice. I look at both sides and say, what would happen if I didn't do it? And then that's one of my motivators to do it.
I think it's a great motivation.
Well, we just go at it differently, don't we? We constantly practice differently. Mm-hmm. You know, that really kind of brings us into the one item that we were going to zero in on today for our discussion, hopefully get people encouraged to talk, and that is, what virtue should we practice with this week? What can we leave our listeners with? What can we talk about today and then see how it worked for them next week? And that would be practicing
speech.
Speech.
That's huge.
That's huge. Good speech. Words are killers. What do they say?
All you can think of is like these things like sticking your foot in your mouth or, you know, if we've all met somebody or maybe that has no filter, you know, that just kind of says something. And there's an adage that says, if you can't control your mouth, there's no way you can hope to control your mind. And
that couldn't be more true, could it?
It's
because the words are after the mind has already done its job. And if you can't control what's coming out of that mouth, you're never going to get to intention before your actions. So, and it's amazing because, you know, when I post things on Facebook, I watch, even though we don't have a huge amount of followers, it's building. I watch the postings and the people that follow it. And I posted something on speech and we had a whole lot of interest in it. You could just see. So people can relate to their speech.
Well, I think so. I know that it's a... I can relate to it. I don't know whether... I mean, mine's not so much the blurting out stuff. Mine's more of the, I should have said, you know. I'm always the one that said, you know, at 1 or 2 hours later, what I should have said was,
right.
You know.
Well, now that you mentioned that, we did write about in our handout both sides of approaching. So let's cover both sides. Let's cover the negative side of, in other words, restraining from saying things, and then the positive side of initiating good words.
Okay.
So we start with the negative side, and basically there's 4 points we have to keep in mind when we try to exercise restraint over our words. We try not to lie. And we covered that last week in the overall authenticity.
We're talking about types of harmful speech.
Yes.
Okay.
So this is what we restrain from.
Got it. So you said lies, right? So
yeah.
How about divisive speech?
Yes.
Meaning to stuff that you say that is intended to create turmoil or rift between people. That's definitely a no-no.
And notice in the handout, we always talk about the lie was the intent of misrepresenting the truth. So we always speak to intent before the lie. Divisive speech, the intent of creating a rift. You don't just divisively speak. You're operating on intention. And what is that intention?
To create harm.
To create a disharmony.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we have to watch that. We have to understand that. So divisive speech would be, and of course, if we've already had divisive speech and we want to stop in the middle of it, that's good too. But if we want to catch it before we do it.
That's even better.
Right, and that's where you'd have to get to your intentions.
Absolutely.
And you'd have to be monitoring your intentions before your speech and say, well, and that's what you're really good at. Like you say, you don't blurt a lot of things out. So you have the advantage. We call you the sniper at home. The kids know what that means. Is you just sit back and you watch. You have that great personality that just learns and takes input. And so you observe. And like you say, your speech has to work on shooting the gun. Mine is on unloading the gun. Because I'm coming at it from kind of a maximizer who has great ideas, a mile a minute, thinking about the future. And sometimes I shouldn't speak. It's bad timing. I run into this all the time. I watch myself say something, and I'm getting better at that because I've watched that energy.
The enthusiasm takes control, doesn't it?
And then you lose the purpose behind it. And you might, I think I'm doing good on the truthful side. And I think I'm doing the beneficial. My heart's in the right place. But the timeliness is what I find, and with my personality trait, is where I have to really work hard. When to speak.
Whereas I'm practicing to speak up more.
Yeah.
Bring it more to the forefront.
And why are we different? Because our personalities are different.
I know.
So as we were discussing with one of our students earlier today, remember we were talking about that those strength finders that we work with, the Gallup strength finders, that tell us about how we operate, those are really good cues on how we practice, because we practice differently. You have a learner and an input, so you're always listening with intent to gather input and learn about what they're saying. I've got an influencing kind of personality that's in the go mode and ready to change things and help others.
It's more of a proactive speech pattern.
So each of us have to use that cue or kind of a cliff notes as to how we are wired to help us practice. In addition to divisive speech, we also restrain from harsh speech.
Yeah, hurtful stuff. Yeah. Saying things that hurt others.
Intent to hurt others. You got it. And then lastly, what's the fourth item that we restrain from?
Well, it's the idle chatter.
That's a difficult one.
You think?
I do. I think for most people, that's what they call the water cooler discussion.
Well, that's the gossiping. That's gossiping, or the intent to
I have found that comes
from... not your story to tell, so, you know.
That comes from my boredom. If I'm bored, I could end up in idle chatter and then have to catch myself afterwards. So, you know, each one of these emotions, and you look at cause and effect in your actions, why am I engaged in idle chatter? Now, I could blame others, but then I've always got the opportunity to walk away from them, don't I?
Right.
So why
that's
am I
kind of that awkward moment, though, you know, like if somebody says something that's kind of gossipy, and so you're straddling the fence, like, do I add in, or if I don't say anything, there's that awkward silence, and then they'll know I don't agree with them, or, you know, so then you get kind of like falsely sucked in to just make a comment, and then you kind of go, I didn't even want to say that, and now I was party to it, and, you know, it's...
Yeah. It all takes time, and you have to be really looking inwardly during these conversations so you can exercise that good judgment, lessen the words, because we don't want to hurt anybody with our words.
I go back to what you were saying. You've said this a number of times, and you keep bringing it up, and it's kind of these good things to remember, like when you stop and you think about the speech that you're about to deliver.
Yeah.
Okay. The three things are, is it truthful? Is what I'm about to say truthful? Is what I'm about to say beneficial? And is it timely?
TBT.
TBT.
Truthful, beneficial, and timely is a good practice. Meet all three tests.
I mean, if you just kind of stop and said those, I mean, you'd be golden. You wouldn't say anything.
Well, in my case, I mean, truthful, beneficial, and timely, I would say about 2% of what I say if I was following the rules.
Well, I'd say truthfully and beneficial. You just have to work on the timing. Isn't that what you just said?
Yeah, but beneficial, practice with that one, Carol, for a week. Just try beneficial.
So what you're saying is, who's it benefiting? Is it benefiting me by saying it because I want to be understood? Or is it going to, you know, am I imposing?
Well, if you're speaking, it's. I hope it's for the betterment of others, right? You're not, you don't need to speak to be understood. You want to understand. So if you're speaking, hopefully you understand where another person's coming from, and it's for the intention of helping that other person. That's a tall order.
Yeah, I know.
Because how much during the day are we really speaking to be understood? 90% of the time? 80%?
It's more than 50, that's for sure.
That's because we got to go back to lesson 4 about authenticity. Got to be honest with ourselves.
That's why they all weave into each other.
But see, we got to do this without beating ourselves up. And we got to let all our listeners off the hook, just like our teachers let us off the hook. You're not perfect out there. Listen to us. You're not perfect.
Yay.
Right? Just start being authentic about your actions, and that's how they get on the road to recovery. It's not, and you start looking at them as just actions. It's not me, it's my karma. But be honest about how you're going to change it.
I need to have that truthful, beneficial, and timely thing.
Yeah. Well, and notice how they all focus on intent, and that's where the speech intersects the training of the mind. So we're right back to intention, where everything all of the teachings that we'll be working with in the 10 mind qualities bring us back to intention, because that's the highest leverage point of our actions, words, and thoughts.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the most subtle form of momentum that's moving us forward. Undetected momentum is where we want to transform ourselves. So let's take, we're halfway into the thing. Before we talk about the positive, and let's give it a chance for our listeners to reflect. Take a 1 minute break.
Okay.
Let our listeners reflect, and please bail us out of this and give us a call.
Oh, I can keep talking. No.
You can tonight.
Okay, so it's break time.
Let's take a break.
Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner genius. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.
Well, we're back. Before the little break, we were talking about speech in negative terms. We were talking about harmful speech specifically. Now we're going to shift over and talk about positive speech. And what we mean by positive speech is speaking in ways that are trustworthy, harmonious, comforting, worth taking to heart. When we practice doing these positive forms of speech, our words become gifts to others.
That's a nice statement.
I love that phrase, yeah. Gifts to others. Because I don't know that we actually think of speech sometimes as it's a gift, or we don't think that we've have that oratory finesse,
right,
to deliver something that's a gift to somebody else. But it's really quite simple.
But you know it when you say some nice things to somebody, don't you?
Yes, I believe you do.
I've been in your presence when you've said some wonderful things, and I've just looked at you, and you knew it, and I knew it. And it was the right thing at the right time with the right person.
You do. You do know that when it all kind of falls into place, don't you?
Yeah.
And I think it's a good feeling, too. It's a good feeling. But do you think people, well, I'm sure that if it's in the repertoire, people do listen to you more. Kind of their ears are more in tune to what you say because they know that you're going to deliver something not in negative, hurtful, unskillful speech, but you're more of a positive
giver. Oh, people respond well. If you really, you know, I've watched you around children. You know, you're a magnet for children because of some of the nice things you say. Kids know this stuff.
No.
They know when somebody speaks warm and kind and loving to them.
Well, that's really thing. Thank you. That was sweet of you to say that.
Yeah.
That was the right
speech.
You'll
get it on the air, but you'll never get it private.
That was right speech, by the way. I can see where this is going.
I was doing that for a show.
Yeah, okay. Perfect timing. There's nothing wrong with your timing. What are you talking about?
Oh, boy.
But I think also another thing, and I keep coming back to this word empowering. It just seems when we do the right things, when we're acting, it's sort of like when we're firing on all cylinders. Do you know what I mean? When all pistons are firing or cylinders or whatever it is with the car metaphor, that we're just really a well-tuned machine. You know, we're just like one of the, you know.
Yeah, I can see the smile in your eyes.
I believe it. I really do. I feel that way because I've experienced it in spots and it feels good.
Well, that's, you've covered the positive side. And hopefully we'll have some calls coming in. If not, we'll just...
Well, I'd love to hear from anybody that wants to call in to talk, that can give examples about, you know, when they've had the positive. And I think, you know, even negative, it doesn't, you know, or maybe when they caught themselves, or they kind of like, you know, what are the old sayings, like, you know, bite your tongue, things like that. Like when you're ready to say, you know, bite your tongue, or how about when something comes out and they say pearls of wisdom? Yeah. So there's something, there's...
And if they can relate through their own personality and say, I'm the kind of person that, you know, gets up in the morning and is in go mode. I'm like you, buddy, or I'm like you, Carol, and this is the practice I've worked. So we can always relate to help others with similar personalities, because our practice will spill over.
Absolutely. I can relate
so
to that.
If our callers can relate to their, to what they know about themselves and how they operate and do these things to improve their speech and use it as a way to get closer and closer to intention, where we all want to be.
Now, this, you know, this next part of, there was another kind of heading that you talked about with the speech, was sense of humor. I did not get this at all.
You didn't get the sense of humor?
Well, you got to explain it to me, because I must have missed something, because it didn't connect with me.
Well, that's that crazy, you know, someone who's the greatest humorist, you know, they're using their speech to make points.
Social
points.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, George Carlin used to do it with words and the use of words, and kind of make fun of us, how we would come up with all these new words. Now, besides his vulgarity, there was a lot of good speech that he was using to kind of tell us, you know, how politically correct we are.
Well, yeah. I think he was a master of the obvious.
Right. So let's take one of our calls, and we've got Ian on line one.
Oh, very nice.
Hi, Ian.
Hey, buddy.
Hi, Ian.
Carol.
Hi, Ian.
Can always count on you to break the ice.
Well, thank you so much for doing this again. I know it's got to be tough when nobody calls in, and you're doing a great job to keep it going like that.
Yeah, we got listeners who listen, but they don't call.
Well, hopefully they will. It takes a bit of thinking about some of this stuff, and maybe we'll get some calls on following weeks. But you've moved on a little bit from when I started to call, but I was just reflecting on the benefits of the negative and positive type of speech. And I find it quite amazing when I look back, thinking about idle chatter or divisive speech, how there's some kind of mind trick that provides entertainment to the mind by indulging in that type of speech. But then when you compare that with the benefits of when you know that you've said something really, really good and very useful to somebody else, very helpful, and the way it makes you feel, I find it astounding that I ever indulge in the negative side, because the benefit is so superficial and it isn't really a benefit, whereas the benefit of the good speech is so good. How come I haven't learned already to never do the negative stuff?
That's the old adage, right? You can't behave yourself out of what you behave yourself into all at once.
Uh-huh.
Right? But I agree with you. Boy, you really do feel good when you say the right things, and why can't we do more? But if we're not careful with that, we put a whole bunch of more thoughts on our and more pressure on ourselves, saying, well, I'm not living up to my standard of good speech, right?
Yeah.
So I think at least in my experience, Ian, the past has a lot to do. The past actions and intentions have a lot to do, and we can't clean it up overnight. We just can keep watching. But I think it's really good that you brought attention to what you want. So you're very skillfully desiring that good speech. And that's the start of anything. That's the first step. You're saying, I prefer this type of speech. And now you start rooting out the other speech because you don't want that anymore. I can even hear it in your voice. You just taste it.
Sure. Yeah.
Do you find it frustrating to work through that way? Or, you know, Not to put you on the spot here, but in your practice, is it?
Well, it is frustrating to catch yourself after the fact, having spoken unwisely, and like when I say when the reward is so, it just really isn't there. You might do some committee member saying, "Oh, you should say this because that'll be entertaining," and then you do it, and it really isn't.
But you do have to recall that you're not doing this alone in isolation, too, right? I mean, there's part of that whole unadmirable friendship that you're surrounded with, in some cases, where that speech is going on and you're absorbing some of that. And like Carol said, sometimes you say, I feel funny if I don't speak up, you know? I'm not part of the crowd. So don't, you know, when you look at it, you might look at it, you come back to 30,000 feet and say, I'm not alone here, you know, even though I have 150% control over my choices, I'm still being influenced by those around me. And I only bring that up, not that it's going to make an instant change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
With certain conversations and people, because we absorb that stuff.
Well, I think it's kind of tricky even in the workplace, because you're kind of isolated with a group that you really can't extract yourself from, so
really?
To speak.
You say you can't all the time, or you some of the time?
You can some of the time. I mean, you can, you know, but there are situations where, like, if you speak up, it'd be awkward. But then if you took a stand and spoke up, it would be awkward. And if you kept silent, it would be awkward. So it's sort of like...
Ian, have you ever found yourself going against that workplace situation and actually speak up and then be better respected for what you said?
Yes, that can happen. Yeah, because there's a perception that it's going to be badly taken, and it prevents me from saying things sometimes. But on the occasions when I have, then there has been times when I've been respected by those that it's important to respect to, and I think also, although it may be embarrassing for the person that you're countering in some way by being silent or bringing attention to the fact that wasn't a good thing to say, in the longer term, it may be that, you know, from their point of view, if they reflect on it, that it will make them think about doing it another time. So sometimes the perceptions of what we think is going to happen aren't necessarily as bad as we might think they are.
Right. You know, an example I've witnessed when I've been around admirable people, and I do this because we have another one on the line, but just quickly, I've noticed when someone says, I'm not comfortable speaking about Tom because he's not present, that carries huge volume. Everybody just all of a sudden looked at themselves and said, I guess I'm not comfortable either. You know, you could see it in their faces.
Well,
when
they realized
said
that was true. You're right. That wouldn't be.
Right. So I want to leave it with that thought, you know, because that's just an admirable thing I've witnessed. People that I admire very much have come up and said that.
Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, Ian. Let's take Tom online, too.
Thank you.
Hi, Tom.
Hello.
How are you?
Hey, buddy. Hey, Carol.
Good to hear from New Hampshire.
I'm at work tonight. I was getting a little bit uptight because I was in the middle of something and I couldn't get the beginning of your show, so I tuned in about 10 minutes into your show. I said, oh, I got my cell phone in my pocket. And so I'm walking down the hallway, and I've got the phone in my ear, like pretending I'm on the phone. I'm listening to you guys. So now I'm at my desk, and I'm listening. I'm enjoying it. Once again, very grateful to be able to participate. And I'm going through the little handout. I'm going down everything, and I'm going, check. Yeah, I'm doing pretty good here. And I got to virtues of self-control. And I got to good temper. Self-control regarding anger. And I'm like, yeah. Put a big asterisk right next to that one. That gets me in trouble. you know. Just, you know, doesn't happen often, but when it does, boy, oh boy.
Yeah, doesn't it?
I don't know if it's the Italian in me or what. But,
you said it, not I. It's the same thing. I that's what I work with for many years, and I still do. That does that. There's the, when you say the Italian, yeah. you're talking like it's a genetic pool, but really it's the karma that we grew up with.
I know,
right?
It's not.
The family conversations.
Yeah, it's not. I wasn't paying attention. I mean, it just happened yesterday. Something happened very egregious, and I felt very wrong. It truly was, but then I lashed out with anger, and then just, you know, wasn't skillful at all. So it's something I think, you know, it's good to have this conversation and step back and say, okay, what could I have done to, you know, work with that a little more skillfully?
Yeah. Well, so the practice might be that you might just focus and zero in on anger for a week, right? And make that your practice and say, I'm going to watch anger for a week and see where it arises. And where, you know, yes. What are the causes?
I could go for a month. I could go for a month without it arising. It's just that when it goes, it's everything all built up, you know?
Yeah. So you could go for a month without getting angry and then pop. Is that what you're telling me? You're like
tick, tick, boom? Yeah, I'm pretty mellow. But, yeah, you know me. You know, I'm pretty laid back mostly and pretty cognizant of everything. But boy, oh boy, you know, when it goes, boy, it goes.
And then how do you feel afterwards? Do you feel like drained or what? How do you?
Did you hear Carol, Tom?
Tom?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
Well, I was wondering, how do you feel afterwards? Because you don't, it's not part of your repertoire daily. So when it does happen,
yeah.
It's obvious to you. And then it comes with a whole basket of other stuff. Does it?
Oh yeah, and it was like, oh my God, that wasn't me, you know. That's the main thing I feel like. Oh, yeah. I just, anybody who saw that would get what I feel is the wrong impression of me, because I'm not, I don't feel that is me, but somehow every once in a while it comes out and you feel like, oh boy, you just feel awful. Even though I know I have every right to feel the way I do, but that it came out that way just was not a good reflection on myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think it's a healthy sense of shame is what I'd call that. You know, it's beneath you. Actions that are beneath Mr. Sapienza. Sorry for the last name.
It means wisdom.
That's like Radio 101, honey.
I know, especially after anger. They'll be going to pick him up in the petty car.
Good thing he's like some hundreds of miles away with his anger problem here.
Oh, we're learning this radio thing.
I know.
We're learning this stuff.
Forgive
See what
him,
I told
Tom.
You about speech?
Forgive him.
I feel
timing.
Better already.
Bad timing.
If you missed the part at the beginning, he said he had bad timing where it came to speech.
Just like you had
I
your confession of anger. I had
mine
with timing. So.
That's funny, though.
Tom, thanks a lot. We got Linda on line 3, and we want to try to bring in some female.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for tuning in. Appreciate you. Miss you. Linda.
Hi.
Are you there?
How are you?
How are you?
Good. I'm good. I wanted to touch back on something that Carol had said earlier. Under skillful speech.
What did I say? What did I say that hit it, touched a chord there?
Well, you had said something about, in reference to people working in an office.
Mm.
And I've noticed that that the dynamic can be such that everybody has a point to what they're trying to do there, and I don't feel there's a lot of listening going on, so it's more of a chatter type of thing. Right. And if I get frustrated practicing these items that we've talked about, I usually just try to still my mind and be quiet, because even though it says on the sheet, will be more likely to respond in kind, I read it as maybe, because most likely it'll just go right over somebody's head. And I don't know if that's a conditioning thing, but now that it's just been a few weeks, it's something that I noticed, even before though, really, like a compliment in a sincere fashion is disregarded as if, disbelief. Oh, you can't be saying that about me. And that doesn't talk to me about me. It talks to me about them. But that doesn't lessen the fact that I want to say something. It's just that I don't believe, or maybe I should say I believe that there are people, more people out there that are just, or what is the point, that virtuous or admirable friends in the tiny, tiny little minority.
Yeah.
But I do think too, though, Linda, that I've found, especially in the workplace, that I think the more you say it, the, you know, don't stop being authentic and being who you are and offering up the speech pattern the way you've been doing it. If it's a kind word or something to somebody else, if it's genuine and it's sincere and you feel it, then say it. You know, whether you feel it falls on deaf ears or whether they don't accept it, you know, that's their 50%. But I think in time you'll see, as this keeps going, it kind of takes on its own life, and they hear you speak in a pattern that they say, you know, this is Linda's repertoire here. This is, you know, and then they start wearing it.
Is that what you're experiencing?
It is. Because that's
what I'm... Did it take a while for you?
It did.
I experienced what she's saying, and it might be in our minds too, but, you know...
It took a couple months, actually. Two or 3 months.
So you just kept at it.
I just kept at it, I would say. And I say what would be, I guess, considered the most bizarre thing. I mean, if there's a gentleman that just got his haircut, I'll say, oh, you got your haircut. That looks very nice, sir. I like your new, you know, I got your haircut. People are absolutely floored that first you even notice that they got their haircut. Or like if a gentleman or somebody, especially men, you know.
But didn't you notice what Linda said at first? There were people that even thought you were insincere and said, well, come on, you're being phony.
Well, I think people have a hard time taking a compliment.
Not phony, but just not sincere, right?
Well,
yeah.
It's not, you're just not being sincere. It's just too cavalier.
Well, that's where they're coming from. I mean, if they can't...
But that same person will eventually understand?
I do think so, because I think that kind of knocks down their defenses, and they kind of look at it like, well, she says it, you know... I think their paradigm shift is her consistency is going to make them have a small little paradigm shift and look at it like, you know, the power of her word, or she's saying it. Maybe they'll be there one day when she says it to somebody else, and they'll in their mind agree with her.
Right.
You know, yes, she does look good. Oh, she has a little bit of credibility. She is sincere.
See, this is where I want to bring up the personality issues and the differences that we practice, because you have consistency as one of your top five personality traits. So you might just continue to be consistent with your positive affirmations and eventually make a statement that way. What about us out there that not necessarily consistent like that, that get discouraged like Linda? Linda, have you thought of something else you could do besides, let's say you get discouraged and you're not getting that feedback. Have you thought of other skillful things you could do?
Well, prior to this, I would get an email and it was a sales email or written by a salesperson. And, you know, as you may know, that salespeople have to be positive. It's 99 no's to one yes before that sale comes in. And so they would send these positive emails, and I would cut it out and put it on the refrigerator.
Okay.
And I kept doing that and doing that. And people finally realized who was doing it because it wasn't from me. I just cut it out and put it on there. I'm not so much discouraged as the fact that it isn't something that just kind of through the speech just ta-da, you know, the light bulb doesn't go on all of a sudden. I think yeah. it'll be, you know, something that I'll just have to continue to do and just do it and just do it and be patient and
do it your way. I mean, there's a case where you're cutting it out.
I don't think cut it.
Yeah.
Hey, what?
You're doing it in your way, though, is my point, right? You're cutting these things out and putting it on refrigerator. You're making a statement.
Right. And then I think that as far as the verbal is concerned, personally, I just think it's going to be a longer, a process, which is okay. I mean, I'm not going anywhere, I don't think, for at least 10 years there.
So, well, let's shift attention. Instead of focus, here's a classic case of how we look at reliable happiness. How are you growing as a result of your efforts? So we cannot be happy because externally the people are not responding positively as we would like them to respond or changing their ways in the workplace. Mm-hmm. Linda, how are you growing mm-hmm. as a result of this effort that you're putting in? How can we turn this around?
I think that I just have to recognize it as something that I must continue to do. And accept that it's going to take a while, if it ever really happens. And that's just a matter of fact. It's not the end of the world. When I get kind of nervous, like when the previous gentleman was saying, burst out in anger or something, I just try to think back about the time when I was in class or we were talking about it on radio about stillness of mind, and I grasped that everything's okay, and you know, we're back, you know, Houston does not have a problem anymore.
Yes.
Okay. You know,
that is a way that you are growing though, right? Because you're working on being still
right.
with your mind in the workplace, and that's
right.
new habits
right.
that you're
right.
developing.
But I also think that if your speech is authentic and truthful and it's true to you and deliberate and you feel like saying it and you're sincere, keep saying it. That's where your gift, as we've talked about, speech is a gift. I mean, you know, it's in the giving. It's not in the receiving. It's up to the receiver to take it the way they want.
Right.
Exactly.
If she can get her head,
that's
if
you, very good you, point. Yeah.
That's a good point. And if you can keep thinking about that, mm-hmm. take a larger view of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you just right. keep throwing those presents out, like those people that like go in a helicopter and throw the flyers out and they land all over the city. Just
see, Linda, you're getting the benefit of what I get each morning when she helps me.
Oh.
In our morning coffee discussion. We're so opposites, Linda, her and I. It's like chalk and cheese when we sit
that's
down.
That's why it works.
We appreciate you calling
thank
in,
you
Linda.
So much.
Thank
I'll
you
let
for
you
all
go.
Your input.
Thank you. Because we have to start
take
winding
care,
down here. We've got about 30 seconds left. And Carol, we wound up our fifth show.
We did. And I can't tell everybody out there how much we appreciate the calls in and the experiences and just the well wishes we've received. And before, if people didn't get a chance to call in and maybe they reflected on it this week and they want to email us, where do they email?
It's hello@admirablefriends.org.
hello@admirablefriends.org.
And we're really grateful that there are listeners out there. We know you're out there, and I know it takes time for this kind of new conversation to shift and get you to call. But remember, each time you pick up that phone and call, you're helping somebody else.
Absolutely. The first person experience is
key. That's what we're going to end in. And then we can get this on. If you tell your friends, they can also get this now with iTunes as a podcast. BBS has put it on iTunes as a podcast for us. So we're going to sign off. And again, thank you for being there. You truly make our Tuesdays
absolutely
joyful.
Do.
At Admirable Friends is about discovering personal solutions to life's everyday challenges. We welcome the support of like-minded individuals to help reveal our inner genius. Our listeners display virtuous values based on varying religious and secular perspectives. Yet our common desire is to live authentic lives that lead to reliable happiness. With many distractions at work and at home, we struggle to live up to our ideals. Yet there are times when we triumph. By generously sharing these first-person experiences, our resolve to live authentically is recharged, and our admirable friendship is strengthened. Together, each week, we explore an unwanted emotion and its matching ideal mind quality. The overriding context of our journey is what, when we do it, leads us out of stress and towards reliable happiness. We're grateful to have you join us today.